position number 9433, reel 2.
Mr. A.J. Smith, Reel 2. You left school in the summer of 1916. What career did you think you were going to go into?
Well, in the latter part of 1915, a customer of my father's business, who was a bank manager in the city, suggested that I should go. They wanted youngsters, and so he put my name forward, and I went up and had a medical test at in Harley Street by the bank's specialist, and he said, very nice man, he said, look, why not stay at school a little bit longer? I was about 7 stone. He said, stay at school a little longer, don't rush into this. And so I did, which is very nice of him. And then so I continued at school till 16 and a half. I was also told off by the masters. They said, one of them, a very nice man, he said, do you want to spend the rest of your life counting other people's money? So they were pleased when I didn't go, and because you have to go round and tell them about your books and that. So they were quite pleased. Then when I did leave school, banking I gave no thought for. I went after a job in an insurance company, which is a biggish one now, Willis Faber. They were brokers and insurance, and I got a job there, and then I had a great disappointment. I was pushed down in the basement with 3 or 4 other youngsters about the same, and every morning we had to put new blotting paper in the boardroom, even if the previous days wasn't used, and generally tidy up and leave everything ready for meetings. We had to run messages from place to place. I thought, this isn't what I thought the city was. And I made a great mistake of another customer of the business. It was a director of Barker's, and he suggested I went there. There was plenty of scope and so on. So I told the people in the city I was leaving and where I was going. They immediately offered me a job full-time, like working in the office all the time, but I by then pledged myself to go to Barker's, a very nice fellow in the insurance office who'd been wounded in the war and come out, said, well, look, you're making an awful mistake to leave the city for the West End or Kensington. But it was too late then. I didn't take note of what he said. He was a very nice fellow. And I left and went to Barker's. Well, that was, in a way, all right, but I was wanting to do too much at the time. It was a great mistake. I should have waited a little longer and they would have put us on other work. But that was their way of starting us off. So I went off to Barker's, where I stayed till I was called up. And I had an interesting time there.
What sort of work were you doing
at Barker's? At Barker's, but partly on ledgers. There were huge ledgers. There was a room with about 40 females, and the ledgers were divided A and B and C and all that, all round these huge desks. And I think I was on M, all names beginning with M. I didn't care for much for that because it was the same every day, and had loads of invoices arrive for the sales to customers. You had to sort them out and clip them at the top, post them to a day book and then to a ledger. It was not what I really loved. And then I got a transfer. They encouraged the young ones and some of the women there, who lived in, by the way, in those days. The Barker staff, a lot of them lived in, came from the country. And we started doing the post, that is, collecting from the post office, three of us, three lads, and bringing the letters in. The women had already arrived, about 20 of them, I suppose, in a big room, and we brought sacks of letters over, This is at 6 in the morning. I lived at Acton. I cycled every day. He got there at 6. And we ripped open the envelopes. They were all numbered, so there was no question of anyone stealing. And then the envelopes were distributed by the boss of that section to all these girls. And they sorted them out, sorted the money and sorted the orders and sorted them out. Then we kept collecting up this stuff that they were sorting into departments and that sort of thing. The boss collected all the money together and kept it over there. And then we started about 8 o'clock, I suppose, going round the departments, leaving the letters at various fixed places all round the big store, which has seemed very empty at that time of the day. And that went on until I was called up. That's right.
Did you notice any effects of the war on the composition of the staff? Did you feel there were more women, more young, more old?
All the time, yes. When I arrived, they got nearly all women, only one or two men. Previously, it had been nearly all men. And some of those visitors visited us in uniform, just on their leaves. You know, they popped in. They were going to spend their lives as bookkeepers there in this big bookkeeping department. And gradually, of course, there were no men left. That's right, there were no men, except this one in the post. Well, he had bad eyesight and bad legs, so he was still available. But there were no men at the end, except the two bosses of the department, the bookkeeping department. One had a white beard, he must have been 60-odd, and the other was 50-odd, anyhow. And that was the only men there, and the man in the post room, and us youngsters running around. So it was a good experience, but I made a mistake leaving the city.
Did the men who were left, did they think the women did a good job, were they?
I should say they thought the women did a much better job, probably. Women are very good at that sort of work. Shockingly conscientious they were then, and they saw that everything balanced, that everything was correct, and they were always cheerful. It was rather wonderful, really. Of course, they lived just in houses at the back of Barker's, provided by the company, and they worked tremendously well, of course.
Working in a big department, Shaw, were you aware, I know you were only in the back room, but were you aware of any shortages that were being caused by the war? Foodstuffs or materials?
Foodstuffs, they fed us, we had meals in, that's right, lunch anyhow. I feel sure we did, yes, we must have done, because we were hard at it and I couldn't have gone out to a meal, that's right. So we had, they provided that sort of thing. Shortages of men, there was still the shop, when you went around the shop, there were the shop walkers, the buyers were men still. But I suppose females nearly everywhere, there were no young men at all. That was an occupation where if they didn't want to go, they'd have gone, they'd have had to go.
But did you notice whether there were shortages of things to sell?
Oh, shortages of things to sell. Not by reading the letters which enclosed the order forms. There were all sorts of things, and things for buying to send to troops in their parcels, which people sent to their relatives and that, to France and so on. They were always ordering stuff, or I suppose cigarettes, tinned meat, and sweets galore in boxes and in tins. There were loads of orders we noticed every day for that sort of stuff, or even packed stuff ready to be sent out complete. Yes, there was a lot of that, but there was no shortage of, the shop was full of stuff. No, there was no shortages in that war, in that part. No.
Now, as you came up to 18,
yeah.
Did you find any problem with people giving you things like white feathers? I realise you weren't 18, but did you? You might have looked nearly 18. Did you have any problems with anything
with
like
white
that?
Feathers?
Or
no.
People wondering why you weren't in the army?
No, because I was, as I say, about 7 stone 6 when I joined up, which was pretty insignificant in the way of weight. No, we weren't in any danger of that. There were one or two others of us there, and no trouble of that at all with us. I know it went on pretty widely, which was difficult if an officer came home and wore civilian, had permission to wear civvies. Most of them didn't, because they loved the uniform, obviously. I mean, an officer's uniform was a thing of joy then. It was really beautiful. and good, and they looked the part. Of course, their lives when they got to France was about 10 weeks at the most, the average existence. But I didn't ever see the white feather business, and not to us younger ones, because they'd known most people knew the youngsters, and you know, they thought they were very young. In those days, you were thought to be younger than you were often by the older ones. They're quite different nowadays, I believe.
Did you know what conditions were like on the Western Front?
Yes, we read all the reports and so on, and every Saturday I would cycle out with a friend of mine who's just died, by the way, and we would sit on the hills in Surrey and hear the bombardments going on. You could sit on the hills at Red Hill and Dorking and places like that. That's the hills looking across to France, say, over there. You could hear the distant thunder of any guns and that, because there was always something going on. We used to listen to that, and we didn't connect ourselves definitely with it as regards the future, but we did go out to hear it, cycle out. The roads were clear in those days, very few motor cars, hardly any, and it was quite a pleasurable thing, cycling.
Did you realise how bad conditions were out there?
Out there? Yes, from Bairn's father's cartoons, I should say, more than anything. He was the one that had Old Bill and that sort of person, and that gave a good description of in the water I've got to lie down to sleep in at night, all those sort of things. The pictures were very graphic. But I have left out one bit. I did start taking the Weekly Herald, I think it was called, something like that, which was a sort of anti-everything, being young, so, and I was reading it. Now, a very nice book, news agent across the road where I got it said to me, "Does your father know you're buying this every week?" And I don't think my father had time to know anything about that at all, but I remember the very nice news agent saying that. So any tinge that I had of that sort of thing from a Weekly Herald was lost as soon as I joined up, of course.
What sort of politics did the Weekly Herald have?
Herald had a general grievance against everybody, against people making money out of the war, I suppose, against war in general, probably, and a general grievance against everything, probably against perhaps low wages paid. They were better than they'd ever had, of course, in factories. But I can't remember it, except I do remember being questioned by this very nice news agent. And
did you make any contact with the people or party behind the Weekly Herald?
No, I don't think there's any. I don't know who was behind it then. It wasn't Bottomley, but it was nearly as good a moaning paper as that, John Bull, only that it'd be a slightly different tinge. And they were anti everything, I should think. Well, when you're young, you can incline to be anti quite a bit, even nowadays, or more so now. But anyhow, he cured me of that. He did raise the point with me. Does your father know that you're buying this paper? Imagine, he was selling it, of course. So,
did
yes,
any of the other boys from Barker's read this sort of publication?
I don't know. We were kept very busy, of course. You didn't have time much to think or talk in those days. No, I don't think. I don't know. One was a Roman Catholic, my special friend there. His father was the buyer of the greengrocer in fruit. He was Roman Catholic, and I'm afraid in those days, if one was a Wesleyan, you fought a Roman Catholic. You argued all endlessly about it. And we did have arguments, but we were friends still. He was a very nice fellow. I don't know what happened to him after. I don't know. But
Now, could you take me through the procedure of your call-up? I mean, it started, I believe, with a postcard.
I had a postcard which wanted a confirmation of address and every detail, and something I think it said about being willing to be called under, it was conscription then, but sort of, you know, send this back and so on, and you're willing to be called up. I seem to remember that, which must have come along. I was on the 1st of February 1918, I was 18, so it would have come along probably around about that time. The call-up was delayed by a month or two after that, but that was about the time it came. Just signed it, filled in the details, signed it and sent it off.
There was post. No question in your own mind about being willing?
Oh, no. 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 No, my brother was already badly wounded, and he was in hospital over a year up in the north of England, so I was already well in the idea of being in the army, yes. As he was badly wounded at Passchendaele and had over a year in hospital. But no, there was no question of not wanting to, nor was there a question of my friend that I cycled with. He was not he was quite willing, only he was about 5 foot nothing, so he was in the army, but when he got to France they put him down at the base in charge of, I'll come to that, well, if you like it now you can have it. I was not pleased with him entirely, because they made him a quartermaster sergeant, he being a clerk in the city before he joined up at an insurance company, and he got very high pay, of course, and conditions, and when the war was over he got a gratuity of £43, which he showed me, a post office book. I've got my post office book. I had £7, but I didn't think that was quite nice. We were still very friendly after the war and cycled about together, but it struck me as very strange. You lay yourself into trouble and the others get all the money, and money was scarce in those days. Sorry, that was...
No, that's fine. That's fine. It was better to just put it in there. Now, tell me exactly what happened when you were called up, and what was the date you got called up?
Called up to report to Scotland Yard on April the 7th. I would have had a week or two's notice. On April the 7th, I had to report to Scotland Yard in Whitehall. And when I got there, along with lots of others, we went into a largish, a sizable room, hall, and we were told to undress but keep our coats or whatever we had. And then we stood around, and there were booths all around, a doctor in each one. And one tested your eyes, another tested your heart, another gave you various general tests over, and so on. And they didn't say anything, complimentary or otherwise, they just did their job, and you finished up and told to put your clothes on, and then they said go downstairs. So off we went, troop downstairs into the swearing in room. We sat along behind, there was board tables, like these boards on trestle tables all round this hall. And we all sat in chairs opposite a sergeant. There were loads of sergeants. And they took lots of details and wrote lots of stuff. And then they gave us... we then held a Bible, I should think, and swore to serve King, country, and all the rest of it. And they gave us... It may have been as much as 7 and 6, 5 shillings, 7 and 6, of which we gave half a crown back straight away as a sort of present. And
well, what do you mean as a sort of present?
Well, no, it was probably a sort of custom, I think, you know. After all, sergeants were sergeants, and there's others of this later. I mean, we didn't resent it, it was just we were doing something that we liked, in fact, at that time, and we just handed something back, a sort of custom.
And who told you about the custom?
Well, no, we just felt it. Whether the sergeants had any influence, I don't know. It's probably a libel on them, but that's what I seem to remember. And we didn't resent it. We thought, no, that's quite proper. And they no doubt made a fuss of us, I mean, taking all the details and patting us on the back virtually about this, that and the other. So I hope I'm not wrong, but I think I always seem to remember that some money passed. And
they had a pleasant attitude then.
Oh, very good attitude to us, especially as we were young. They really, and they were old soldiers, regular soldiers, they had been for years and years, and they obviously were pleased to be doing what they were doing, and they made a fuss of you, really, from the other side of the table. They talked you up, you know, into something good.
Now, when you arrived at Scotland Yard, was this just a general recruiting
place, or was there any question of you going to a specific regiment or battalion?
I should say no. This was a general recruiting place for West London, probably a large area. It was no special going anywhere because, in the same, I overheard various bits and pieces. Older men were being drafted in, were being sworn into the artillery and things like that. Bigger men, there were still older men being called up. And they were going off into, we heard, you know, sort of various things. They were going off into artillery and heavy stuff like that, where we should have been pretty useless at our age.
Was there any question of you going into either the Navy or the new Air Force?
No question at all, no. I think if you wanted the Air Force or the Navy, you had to push yourself forward earlier. That's right, you'd had to push yourself. No, it was the Army, no question of anything else.
Did any of the... What was the quality of the group of people you were with on that first day? Did any fail the medical or low grades?
No. Well, we all got... All the 18-year-olds got, I think, A4, which was trained slowly. That was the sort of idea. Because complaints were being made in Parliament about young people of 18 and youngsters being rushed through training and sent to France. So it was A4, I think, trained slowly. That was a good joke later on, but still, that was at the time. And the general run of quite respectable little crowd were, and some of the older men were very, very respectable, because they'd had probably reserve jobs, almost capable people, but now able to be spared and being called up. So it was quite a decent looking crowd.
So what happened after you'd given the 2 and 6 back?
Well, yes. I hope that's not a libel on them. I think something happened, and we didn't resent it. We loved it, in fact, giving away money. We felt important, undoubtedly, if we did. We felt quite important. Oh, after that, we were marshalled and put in a taken in an underground train to Hounslow Barracks straight away. No time lost. And Hounslow Barracks Station, which is very near the barracks, and we detrained there and went into the barracks, and I expect we got something to eat then by that time, yes, which would be important in those days.
When were you given your uniform? Was this straight away?
Hounslow Barracks, I should think the same afternoon they got us together and went off into, we marched off into the stores, or walked off into the stores, where they proceeded to fit our uniform. Well, fit's the wrong word. They gave us uniforms, which fitted where they touched isn't the same. I mean, the necks were all wide open because we were thin. The necks were down here. And they supplied us with uniforms. We walked a bit further and had piled on our arms shirts, a shirt or two, I'm not sure, vests, pants, socks, and boots eventually. But we were heavily loaded, staggering around with all this stuff. Then we went back into the barrack room and proceeded to change clothes put the uniforms on. I say they didn't really fit anywhere, but they were. We were a bit thin, most of us.
Did they make any effort at all to tailor the size of the uniform to the size of
the man?
They
made a slight effort. They had a quick look at you, but I'm afraid there wasn't a great effort, no. There was just uniform, and all very nice and new, and the buttons were not bright, they were new. And right, then the problem arose after that, what to do with the civilian clothes. So along came the sergeants, some very nice sergeants again, men of 50 or more, and they provided brown paper and string at sixpence a time. And sixpence, of course, was a lot of money then. Sixpence a time, nice brown paper and string. So we rolled our clothes up, packed them in the brown paper, tied them with the string and handed them over, and they did deliver them home. To the various homes, to people's homes. I still don't know what happened to my bowler. I had a bowler, but we couldn't pack that. I expect that was, well, I don't know. But that
you
still
didn't
amuses
resent
me.
This profit that the
NCOs no, no, we were rather grateful, because look what a mess we'd have been in knowing what to do. They just helped in every way. You know, there were tables available for getting the stuff onto and packing it, and it was a great help. None of us had thought a word about anything like that.
How long were you at Hounslow Barracks?
I should say another day. And then I should say another day, and perhaps the next morning we went off to a Victoria station by underground, feeling horribly sort of ungainly, very ungainly, because, as I say, the uniforms were brand new, and brand new things never really look too good, and carrying kit bag with all these shirts and with all that sort of thing in, and an overcoat, oh Lord, yes, a big overcoat in a kit bag, staggering into the station, up to the station at Hounslow Barracks. I think it's up in the air to Victoria, and the people looking at us, I don't know, we kidded ourselves, they looked at us, you don't really know. You imagine they did, especially feeling you're all ill-fitting. Anyhow, we got to Victoria Station, and we got in a train to Chatham Barracks, to Chatham. When we got to Chatham, we staggered along the road with all our kit quite away from the station to the barracks. When we got to the barracks, we were perhaps a little early, so we sat on the... There was a road running right through the barracks. We sat on the curb, all a long string of us, and eventually they took us into the orderly room area, where there would be the adjutant, I suppose. He took more details of us. He'd got a list already, but he took further details and also delivered us a number. Mine was 61489. You never forget that. It's funny. If you see a film, name and number is all you need give. Yeah. And a few years later, it was 79328. I mean, you're just there. I don't know. So when you see a prisoner of war film or anything like that, name and number came as easily as anything. Anyhow, we got numbers, and then sergeants again took us off in bunches or groups into barrack rooms, quite good rooms, brick buildings, old, but reasonably comfortable, cots to sleep in. Yes, they took us off and we divided up. We didn't know anybody at all, but we went in groups into these rooms, about, I think, 20 or so in a room, or 25 perhaps, cots all around the room, and wooden floors and so on, blankets only, just blankets on the beds, which were folded up when we got there, and very neatly folded up, and a bed board at the top of them. And then...
Which barracks was this?
This is Chatham Barracks, the Kitchener Barracks at Chatham. Kitchener Barracks at Chatham, yes. And